From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Just hours ago, the first major upgrade to the current COVID-19 vaccine got approved by the FDA. ABC News is reporting these vaccines could be available by next week. And just after students started going back to school, COVID-19 cases, well, they're on the rise here in Idaho. Concerns about COVID, about monkeypox, and even polio are on the minds of many of our listeners right now, just as flu season is starting to approach. So joining us today is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and the current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Pate, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Gemma.
So a lot to get to in terms of public health today, Dr. Pate. And I want to let our listeners know if you have questions about any of this, COVID, monkeypox, polio, the upcoming flu season, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. But with that said, Dr. Pate, I want to talk about this developing story this morning, and that is the Food and Drug Administration has just given the green light to a new and updated COVID-19 booster shot. ABC News is reporting this morning, as I mentioned, that these could be available as soon as next week. And apparently the federal government has purchased, I believe, around 170 million doses of this new vaccine, what they're calling it as a targeted vaccine. Can you tell us what this vaccine is? What's it supposed to be doing for us?
Yeah, so this new vaccine, this is not a surprise. We expected that the FDA would likely give authorization today. The remaining step is that it has to be approved by the director of the CDC. We believe that will be tomorrow. We don't know that for sure, but the ACIP committee, which is their vaccine committee for the CDC, is meeting tomorrow. And we believe at that time they'll render their recommendation to the CDC director. Once she signs off, that will tell us, you know, particularly, you know, who's eligible, when, et cetera. We think we know what that's going to be. But like you said, it's likely these new vaccines will be starting to be available in communities next week. That doesn't mean every provider will be offering them, but they should be hitting most places next week. What these are going to be the updated Pfizer and the updated Moderna. And what it is something we call a bivalent vaccine, which means that it's going to have two different components of the spike protein. One, just like the one that we already got, if you got Pfizer or Moderna, the other component is going to be the spike protein of the BA4, BA5, which those two spike proteins are the same. So think about it as BA5 because that's what's mostly in the country. The idea behind this is that this will be a booster for many people who haven't had a booster yet or haven't had a booster in a good while. And also, it's going to be tweaking that response to try to have people have more protection from Omicron, which is what we've been dealing with since December of last year, which we talked about has some immune escape capabilities. So this vaccine is meant to give a little bit more protection against the Omicron variants as well.
So can we talk then about who's eligible for this? So so to be clear, like someone like me, let's say I've had all of my boosters. Should I still be getting this booster?
Yes. So we won't know precisely until the CDC signs off on this, which I expect will be late tomorrow, because they can modify this. But what we're expecting is that it will be recommended, the Pfizer one for children that are 12 and over, and the Moderna one for those that are 18 and over. And The only requirement will be that we're anticipating is that you have your primary series. In other words, those first two shots. Mm-hmm. So even if you haven't gotten one of the previous boosters, we are anticipating that the CDC will say you can go ahead and get this booster. What we are anticipating is that they're going to say if you just recently had your primary series, those first two shots, they want you to wait at least 2 months before you get this booster. For those of us that have received boosters, whether you've received one or two boosters, we are anticipating that the CDC will say you can have this as your fourth or your fifth booster. And we are waiting to see what interval they say. Many of us think they're going to say that it should be at least 3 months after your last booster, but we won't know till we see that.
Okay. Can we clarify some information in regards to boosters? Because you know as well as I know, with this news coming out, there are going to be naysayers who say, well, see, here's just another shot we're supposed to get. It's because the vaccine and the boosters don't work. Can you clarify that for us?
Absolutely, Gemma. And it's really quite the opposite. The vaccines have been extraordinarily beneficial. But what we've seen is that the vaccines, their primary benefit has been in preventing severe illness. And what we're talking about is markedly reducing the chances that if you get COVID, that you would have to go into the hospital, that you would have to be put on a ventilator, or that you might die. There's no question. I mean, it just can't even be debated. The data is so clear that these vaccines offer tremendous benefit with regard to that. Further, that part of the benefit of the shots has not waned significantly. Where people critique these vaccines is that you can still get infected. And so what we talk about is we call those breakthrough infections. And of course, the reason that we see breakthrough infections is one, that part of the benefit from the vaccine does wane. And so that's what the boosters are intended to do, is give a big boost to that part of the immune response. But so much of this has been because we as a country, we as a world, we just haven't focused on decreasing transmission. People aren't willing to take steps like when you're out in public wearing masks, keeping distance, avoiding large gatherings, those kind of things. And because of that, we've had really pretty much unfettered transmission. And what happens when this virus transmits repeatedly millions of times, it's creating new mutations. And the virus basically gets to experiment out and figure out which mutations give it a benefit. And then it's taken those benefits and it's increased its transmission. And so what we have seen from the initial virus in 2020 to alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and now we're dealing with Omicron, each of these variants of concern have gotten more transmissible. And so even for those that are vaccinated, we're being constantly exposed to high risk situations and people are getting infected. So this booster should help in that regard. I don't think the boosters will eliminate these breakthrough infections. I'm looking forward to the day, maybe it'll be next year, that we'll have nasal vaccines, and I think that might do the trick. But at least this will make sure that you have less of a chance of a breakthrough infection and is going to give you even more protection against severe illness.
I want to turn our attention now, Dr. Pate, to children, and I want to start with back to school. So, you know, here in Idaho, all kids are back in school. We are seeing COVID cases. And it's one of those things where I don't think you are surprised by the fact that we are now seeing COVID on the rise in schools without any mitigation efforts. So what are your recommendations? What are your thoughts? I mean, I know like both my kids' schools, there aren't mitigation efforts anymore. And where do we go from here, especially as we head into flu season, which is right around the corner?
Yeah, Gemma, you're exactly right. I'm just not the least bit surprised. And of course, we have seen that uptick now with schools back in session. And as you and I have talked many times, this just isn't surprising at all, because if you take a whole bunch of people, many of whom are not vaccinated, because we know the vaccination rates in children in Idaho are not very high. And you take those children and you put them close together in rooms for long periods of time, you're going to have transmission of this virus. And so it's not surprising. So what should the schools be doing? And, you know, you and I looked at some of the school plans, and as we talked about, even though we have a more transmissible variant, many of these schools are taking fewer precautions than they did mm-hmm. before. So what should they be doing? Well, obviously, ideally, when we have high levels of transmission, obviously masks, we know they work. We saw back in 2020 that when everybody was masking, we didn't have much flu. We didn't have much strep throat. We didn't have a lot of the things that we oftentimes deal with as we go into the fall and winter months. So masking, of course, would be great. The problem is it's just not acceptable to school officials and to many parents. And so I get that. Well, in the alternative, if we're not going to do that, then really the focus needs to be on ventilation, filtration, circulation of air, because these are respiratory viruses, and that's true of influenza as well. And we have to improve the air circulation, the air filtration. Those would help. Unfortunately, I just haven't seen this, you know, and the schools got a lot of funds that they could have invested in this from the government with the pandemic, but I just haven't seen that any or many of the schools have invested the funds in this.
Mm-hmm. And I must say, Dr. Pate, one thing that I'm seeing, at least at my youngest child's school, is that people have had an exposure. They are wearing a mask. So at least we're seeing that maybe in some schools, it's not a requirement, but it doesn't seem to be as, as controversial, right? At least in my experience with where my child is going. Before we take a break, the other thing I want to talk about, and you mentioned this, is it is the low numbers of vaccine in children. In particular, we are now about 2 months into the COVID-19 vaccine being available to children in the age range of 6 months to 4 years old. But according to the CDC, Dr. Pate, only about 5 to 6% of these children have been vaccinated. I am surprised by that. Maybe I shouldn't be. But what do you think the hesitation is? And what would you tell parents who are, you know, they're trying to do the right thing by their children? I do believe that the majority of parents, no matter where they land on this, are trying to do the right thing for their child.
Yes, I think that's exactly right, Gemma. I mentioned about a year ago that I had a group call with about 15 parents of 14-year-old girls that were in sports, and they were pretty much all very skeptical about getting the vaccine, not sure that there was a benefit or that it was worth whatever they might perceive the risk. But we just talked through it. And by the time I got done explaining to them what the real facts are, I think every one of them got their kids vaccinated. And so I think you're right, Jim. I think what the problem is that parents are confused. There's so much mixed messaging out there. There is so much misinformation out there, so much disinformation out there. And that's why I so appreciate your show and effort to try to get good information out to people. And the problem is that so many people really only weigh their risks when they decide whether to take the vaccine of how likely is it for me to die from COVID if I get it. And for kids, it's very low. And so I think a lot of parents say, well, wait, why would I get a vaccine and particularly one that's all this controversy? Well, the reason to do it is that we don't know what all the long-term health consequences are from infection, and even more so from multiple reinfections. And there is some concerning information out there. We don't have all the information. There just hadn't been enough time, but we're seeing what we call signals that from case reports, from studies of what this virus can do. And so I think people aren't putting that into their risk calculus, but if they considered things like the multi-inflammatory, systemic inflammation in children or long COVID or some of the other things that we're seeing as complications from COVID, I think that would change the risk calculus. Since we don't have time to go into that, I would just say, please, parents of children of any age, there is benefit in getting your children vaccinated. Please talk to your pediatrician or your trusted health provider, or if you have a question, send it into our show. But please get the real facts and don't listen to poor sources because they'll have you make a bad decision.
I have lots of questions today, not just about COVID-19, but we have some polio questions, monkeypox questions as well. But I do want to start with COVID. And Dr. Pate, before the break, we were talking about misinformation. One question that we got is from Joe, because apparently there's some misinformation around the vaccine and an uptick in heart issues. Apparently, Joe says heart-related deaths, especially among 18 to 49-year-olds. And he said, is this actually true or is this more misinformation, and how do we combat that?
Yeah, Jim, what has come out is in the age group that he mentions, the 18 to 64-year-olds, what some studies have shown is that the excess mortalities in that age group during this period of the pandemic were higher than previously thought. And you can only tell that when we go back in time. And so that's why we've got some clarification. And what that is that we are finding more and more associations between COVID and various vascular problems. And that can include the heart, heart attacks, strokes, blood clots to the lungs, to the brain, those kinds of things. And so we are finding those as a consequence of a COVID infection, and it may not show up for months. And it doesn't usually get counted in what is referred to as long COVID. One could argue that this is long COVID, but they don't typically consider this. And so this is actually something that has been found related to likely to the COVID infection. We are not seeing this problem from the vaccines.
And that is where we need to clarify this, is because there is this misinformation out there that it's coming from people getting vaccinated. But if I'm understanding you correctly, it is truly the infection. It's just that now we're getting more information by being able to look back for the last 2.5+ years.
That's right, Gemma.
Okay. Denise writes in. She's from Boise, Dr. Pate, and she says she's 80 years old. She's in good health. She has diabetes, but no insulin. She got her second booster for COVID on March 31st. So she wants to know, with the new booster targeting Omicron, should I wait until the end of September, or can I get the booster as soon as it is available? She says, and I always wear a mask when going into stores.
Well, thank you for that question. That's a great question. And I would say, first of all, kudos to you. Being 80 years old, you're obviously taking good care of yourself. It's a good practice to wear masks when you go into grocery stores and other settings where you're going to be around people. I still do. And so kudos to you. I would say there's no reason to wait. If you want to get it next week, week after, I think there's no reason to wait. We know these vaccines are safe. There is a lot of Omicron still out there. We've talked about how it looks like in many states, including Idaho. It looks like we've peaked. But, you know, we're not coming down real fast. So there's still a lot of Omicron out there. And frankly, I think she's exactly the kind of person that we want to get boosted, especially since for her, her last vaccine was in March. She may be seeing some waning of the protection. So I would say go ahead and get it next week if that's convenient for you.
And Dr. Pate, what do we know in regards to getting this Omicron booster and getting the flu vaccine? Because, you know, I just was reminded by my children's doctor that, it's that time of year again where they're going to be getting the flu vaccine in and, you know, needing to get that as well. So should we be spacing those out with the COVID booster and the flu vaccine, or does that matter, or do we know?
Yeah. So there's no need to space them apart. You can get both vaccines. However, practically speaking, I think most people should be spacing them apart because it's too early to get your flu vaccine just right now. So I would go ahead and get your COVID booster in the next couple of weeks as it becomes available. For influenza, stay tuned because I'll update my recommendation as I get more information. But right now I would be saying that you probably ought to shoot for your flu vaccine probably about mid-October. And it's going to be important because of a couple things. First of all, there's some misinformation that one of these shots will protect you against the other. The COVID shot doesn't protect you against influenza, and the flu shot does not protect you against COVID. And you can get infections with both at the same time. And in fact, in the past, it appears that people actually do worse if they get infected with both, and that's not surprising. The extra reason to get the flu vaccine this year is we always look to the Southern Hemisphere to see what their experience is, because those countries are just coming out of their winter. And so they usually get flu before we do, as we get prepared to move into our winter. And they had a bad flu season. Australia is great at monitoring influenza carefully. This was their worst flu year in 5 years. So we can expect something similar for us. And so I would just highly recommend to people, get that flu shot. If nothing else, it just will help protect you from having to miss work, miss school, whatever. But it sure can protect a lot of people. And so get that later. But go ahead and get your COVID booster now.
And so just for folks who might be joining us right now, wait for that flu vaccine then until mid-October. And I asked that, Dr. Pate, because I feel like in the last couple of years, we'll get that call from the doctor saying, don't forget your flu vaccine. And it's, you get that call in September. And I've just, gone in and gotten my kids, and myself. But I guess now, wait a little bit and then get that flu vaccine.
Yeah, although it's fine if you get that reminder from your physician's office in September and that's when you're thinking about it and you might forget if you wait till October, go ahead and get it. That's fine. The reason that I kind of strategically try to time it is that if we have a particularly long flu season, then sometimes you see some waning of the protection from the flu shot. So, most of our flu cases in typical years, Kind of really pick up steam late November, you know, maybe around Thanksgiving time, especially people traveling, all that. And it takes about 2 weeks from your flu vaccine for you to get the full protection. So I always kind of try to time it a little bit later so that it'll last longer through into next year, but you don't want to time it too late that you're already mm-hmm. getting exposed. So I'll certainly update things on this show as we get more, as we track activity. But right now, if you have a choice, put it on your calendar for October. But if you get the reminder in September and that's when you're thinking about it and you might forget, just go ahead and get it, because the most important thing is to have it.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get back to another COVID question. And this is from Helen. She's a retired nurse, and she wrote us after she saw her doctor for her annual physical, because she writes, she says, I requested a BCG vaccine series, which my doctor said is unavailable in the United States. And my doctor said she would not give it to me anyway. My doctor says Omicron does not cause the inflammation we saw before, that no one is even ordering inflammatory marker labs. She says, my doc said, quote, it really is just a cold now, unquote. Helen goes on to say, she says, I respect my doctor, but she says, Dr. Payne, I'd like your view on this.
Yeah, Helen, you know, so I certainly agree with part and disagree with part of your doctor's advice. The issue about BCG, you're right. Your doctor's right. We did stop using BCG vaccines. Those go way back many decades. And one of the reasons we stopped doing it is that we couldn't then test. If you'd receive that, we couldn't do TB skin testing because it would give a false positive result. There has been some reports that BCG vaccination, as well as some others, might give some added protection against COVID, probably just because of the fact that any of these vaccines are kind of revving up your immune system a bit. So I don't think that getting BCG vaccine is a primary strategy. You're much better served by getting your COVID booster. And your physician's right. I don't think you could get the BCG vaccine in the U.S. even if your doctor tried. Now, on the comment about Omicron, I do cringe when I hear this. Certainly for many people, they get the Omicron infection, and particularly if they've been vaccinated, they may report very minor symptoms, nothing more than the nuisance of like a common cold, and that's true. However, one should not extrapolate that to the entire population. There are plenty of people who are still getting hospitalized, having significant health problems, and of course, our deaths are still higher than at baseline. So, Omicron certainly can be mild like a cold in some people, but it's not in everyone. And, mm-hmm. and the other thing is, of course, we don't have to worry about long cold syndrome. So we worry about long COVID, and that's a difference too. So that's what I would have to say about that.
Sarah sent us a question in, and she said, can a recent COVID infection cause your A1C to spike? Can COVID harm the pancreas, thus putting us at risk for prediabetes or diabetes?
The answer is yes. We have now a number of studies. We actually made this observation. I believe it came out of Italy, was the first to notice this in late 2020. They started seeing a lot more kids with diabetes than was expected. And this became a great concern because the pancreas cells are very flush with ACE2 receptors. And so the concern is that the virus can attack the pancreas, which makes your insulin. And if it kills enough of those cells, it might render you insulin deficient, and therefore you could get diabetes. And in fact, subsequent studies have shown that is the case. If you follow a population of people who have gotten COVID, my recollection is that the hazard ratio, that is the chances, the increased chances for developing diabetes, were about double. So certainly most people are not going to develop diabetes after COVID, but this is one of the potential consequences of COVID infection.
Mm. Dr. Payne, I want to end by talking a little bit about polio. And I have to say, I never thought I'd be talking about polio in present terms. But here we are talking about that. And one of the reasons is we have a question, but also the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health is urging healthcare providers to watch out for polio because of this first U.S. case of the viral disease in nearly a decade in New York. And it caused paralysis of this patient. So first off, Dr. Pate, what do we know right now about, this case of polio in the U.S.? And I guess how concerned should we be about this?
So, you know, you're right, Gemma. I wouldn't have predicted we'd be talking about polio either. This is a disease that we largely eradicated in the United States in the very late 70s. And we did that through vaccines, through vaccinations, and gave people protection from the polio infection. What has happened is that we have segments of the population, and in New York, there is particularly a population of Orthodox Jews who did not want their children vaccinated, and so they haven't been vaccinated for polio. They haven't been vaccinated for some other things, and we've previously seen some measles outbreaks and other things. Mm-hmm. But what has happened in this population is when you have a significant number of people that aren't vaccinated, it puts everyone at risk. And what happens is they are now vulnerable to polio. Now, polio infection in the vast majority of people may go unnoticed or may give minor symptoms. But every now and then, with the virus transmission, it becomes neuropathic. In other words, it can cause neurologic disease, and it can cause it in a few different forms. But the one that most people are aware of, and what happened to this poor gentleman, is that he got poliomyelitis, which is a paralyzing and unfortunately untreatable condition from polio. And so then what happens is polio is circulating in the population. It enters the water supply. It can be transmitted easily, particularly among children, because this spreads very easily, particularly hand-to-mouth contamination. And if you get this virus and you are not immunized, then that virus can convert into this neurologic form, and that's just a real tragedy. There's a simple solution, and that is make sure your children are vaccinated. What your children should be getting here in the United States is a vaccine called IPV, the inactivated poliovirus. They cannot get polio from it. They should get that. It's a shot. They should have three shots by the time they're age two. They get a fourth shot between ages 4 to 6. And even an adult, if you think you haven't been vaccinated or you're unsure, you can get vaccinated. But the key is get everybody vaccinated. Because what happens is, particularly when people are coming from other countries, the way that they are vaccinated, they get a live virus, whereas in the United States, we get only the inactivated. And if they come here, excuse me, they can be shedding that virus, and they can infect others from the vaccine that they received.
So if we have been up on our vaccines, then, Dr. Pate, with our children, and if our parents were got us vaccinated as kids, we should be okay.
Yes, don't worry. If you've had your vaccines, if your children have had their vaccines, they're going to be protected.
Okay. Dr. Pate, as always, I want to thank you for talking with us today. And so much to talk about in terms of public health. So really just appreciate your time and your expertise.
My pleasure, Gemma.
And as always, we've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He's the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, talking about everything public health, from COVID-19 to polio, to where we are in terms of the flu season as we start heading into that. And if you have any questions in regards to public health, please send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And we will, of course, ask those questions next week.